Hello and welcome to episode number 367 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
We are right in the thick of it now, in the very busy month, which is
there's a lot of TV.
There's just a lot of everything. It's great. Like, there's films to talk about that we're excited for, like this week's film. Obviously, the TV is insane right now. Hell, even the video game world is very, very exciting and busy. But that has been all year, to be fair. So, yeah, loads of good shit going on right now. Yeah, we're going to be discussing some of it this week, starting with the latest VHS movie. So, yeah, we've covered all of the new ones for the show, which is very exciting. Obviously, this newest installment just dropped on Shudder a couple of weeks ago, I think. Or was it last week? I can't remember.
It might have been last week.
Yeah, so hopefully people would have checked it out by now. But yeah, there's only one news item this week before we get into the film, which is actually to do with kind of this film. Well, it's to do with this franchise, because hot off the heels of this one, they've already announced another one. So VHS is going strong right now. They posted a bunch of, you know, record-breaking stuff on Shudder. Didn't care to look at the specifics, but it seems to be doing very well. On the platform, and so yeah, they've announced over the weekend Comic-Con a seventh installment of the franchise, and all we know about this one so far is that it will focus on sci-fi horror, which I find to be an interesting thing for them to say up front, because that's been always a part of VHS since the start, really. So it's nothing new, but it is interesting that they're kind of saying that up front. Obviously, these last three have had the themes of the years, and I really like these light themes to kind of tie the segments together, which we'll get into with this new one. So I'm always down for just a light theme. You know, you don't want to put restraints on people, especially when it comes to anthologies, because that's the awesomeness about it, is you can just do anything. But I love that they just say, yep, the new one's just going to be sci-fi horror, and you can take that to mean whatever you want it to mean. The last thing as well is that this is scheduled for release next year as well, so probably in a year's time from right now. But yeah, what do you make about that? Obviously, it's cool to see the franchise doing well, and I guess what specifically is it, is sci-fi horror like something that you'd be excited for the next installment to lean into?
I mean, yeah, I would say not necessarily. I think I like it just being untapped horror in general. There could be a sci-fi horror segment, but I don't need it to be thematically the entire thing. I'm similar to you, where I like it being this kind of year, you know, this setting or something like that. I think that's what was so cool about ABCs of Death. You know, and it was like, oh, okay, cool, yeah, you've got this letter. But sometimes it can be on the nose, and sometimes it can be absolute obscurity. And, you know, that always made them a real fun guessing game. And I think with this, like, when I'm watching a VHS segment, often I'm like, you know, I'm trying to guess what's going on. And is it a part of a wraparound? Is it part of a segment? Is it one segment? You know, and all these different things. And that, you know, I enjoy that part of it massively, for sure.
Yeah, me too. I think it's not something that is like incredibly exciting, even though I obviously love sci-fi horror, and you know, there's been plenty of segments in VHS that have kind of achieved that. But I love this current setup that they've had with these last three films, and I would have just liked to continue that, you know, don't break it. I think that is, to me, is the one kind of that differentiates it from that original trilogy, is these kind of yearly ones, you know, based upon a year. And so it's hard, because obviously now you've done 85, you've done two in the 90s. With it being VHS, it's like you do start to run out of room as to where you would put it. You know, because there's any kind of if you're trying to keep it based in like you people that use VHSs, it's very difficult. But I would love to have seen like VHS 24, you know, and it's like, okay, so it's coming out next year and it's set in 2024. Like, what would that look like? You know, that would be interesting to me, to go hyper modern after going in the 80s, or try and go as early as you can and still get away with people with camcorders, which I feel like this is already kind of pushing it. You know, could you get into the late 70s? I'm not too sure, to be honest. I'm not an expert on like how accessible home video was at that point. But yeah, it would be interesting. But either way, I'm super pumped that this is still going, and I think it's the perfect, as we've said time and time again, like the moment that this was first announced, the the first of these new films, and it was like a collaboration with Shudder, it was just perfect. And it was something that didn't obviously exist when the original VHS films came out. And it was so much harder for them to find an audience, because this is never, it never was, and it never should be, and never will be, a cinema franchise. So if you're going to go, you know, into a smaller route, the idea of streaming services, again, wasn't popular when those original films came out. But now we have literally specifically horror-based ones as well. So, you know, this would have been great on other platform streaming services as well. But the fact that it's on Shudder, it's just so good. I'm so happy that it's found its home, because otherwise, I mean, it's why they probably stopped doing them, really. Because they are hard to fund, these things, when you know, like, it's for such a niche market, I think, these films. But, of course, a service like Shudder is all about catering to that niche, to the masses. So it's perfect. And always coming out of Halloween as well, like, they know what they're doing. They always get this big bump around this time. You know, they've got, like, the new Hell House movie coming out in a couple of weeks as well, which is another great kind of franchise that fits perfectly on Shudder. Like, they know what they're doing. They just need to get Psycho Goreman. That's, like, the only thing that they're missing. Obviously, they have the first one, but they need to get the rights going forward. I had to get my mention of PG in there. It's been a while.
Well, I don't know if it has. I'm pretty sure we probably spoke about it last week.
I don't think we have mentioned PG for a while. Like, I'm just sitting here waiting for my comic to eventually come out.
You ain't getting that comic.
Which has only been delayed for 2 years at this point. So
you ain't getting that comic.
I have a digital copy of it, but I refuse to look at it.
That's the best you could ever hope for, the fact that you've got a digital copy. Like... Yeah. The fact that you think you're getting a physical version, you're smoking crack.
Like, I have the PDF, but at this point I'll have to, like, send it to you and you'll have to print it out for me, because I feel like that's the best I'm going to get. But
that definitely is.
But either way, shall we talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about VHS 85. So yeah, like we already mentioned in the news, obviously this is the sixth installment in the overall VHS franchise, the mainline franchise. And yeah, kind of the end of this trilogy, I guess, on Shudder, since it's come back. And come back very strongly, you know, looking back on those first two. Really liked them. You know, I don't think they have, like, these amazing standalone segments. There's, like, a couple. I remember that sci-fi one that just really reminded me of a part of Resident Evil Village with, like, the body mods and shit. Like, that was super cool.
Yeah.
But it's hard to remember too many until you really, like... I remember a few weeks ago we looked up one of the directors, because he was, like, the guy who did that... the one where it's like they're spying on the neighbor and she's like a Medusa type character, and it's like, oh yeah. I kind of forgot about that, and then yeah, you no, remember how cool it is.
I think it's just that those first couple of movies were iconic at that time. Like it just was a real I think it really helped create an identity for the franchise of what this should be.
Yeah,
a template, you know, for what a good segment should be.
Definitely. And it's been great, you know, like it's cool to see it back, but the fact that the movies have actually been great as well is obviously a huge bonus. And then we get into this one, obviously themed around the 80s this time, 85. Some pretty big names on the list, obviously a couple that we've already covered multiple times. And what's funny is that you probably already know this, do you know the thing that connects these two directors, the two big names, which is David Bruckner and Scott Derrickson?
Not off the top of my head.
They both directed Hellraiser movies. Obviously not.
What one did he do?
Derrickson did, like, was it Bloodline, the fourth one? It was like his first film. It was Inferno. Which one was that?
Fifth one. Right.
Yeah. He did Inferno. Yeah, so we don't get that in the Arrow box set, unfortunately.
No, I gotta be honest. I would have loved it. I really loved it. Just like every Hellraiser movie, just give us all the tracks.
Extras, yeah.
Like, what's the extra, like, 50 quid in rights to just get those movies at this point?
Yeah, well, it would have been an extra probably 50 quid for us, which I'm not sure would have been worth it, but...
Absolutely not. No, I want the price to remain the same. I'm not getting any extra bang for the buck. It just would be funny.
I love it. They already gave us 4, which we definitely didn't ask for, and I probably didn't need 3 either.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, 1 and 2 was more than enough. But of course, beggars must be choosers. But yeah, it's like I say, they've Hellraiser movies aside, because let's not talk about those, but they have done movies that we very much enjoyed. Obviously, Scott Derrickson recently did The Black Phone, Sinister, and obviously David Bruckner did, what was it, The Night House and The Ritual. And he's also been involved in, like, pretty much a lot of the... Like, he directed... That's how we know him. He directed, in my opinion, the greatest VHS segment, which is Amateur Night, on the first film.
I was going to say, you know, that's where the thing of him returning to this franchise is kind of, you know, a big deal, really, because I don't think he's not touched it since then, has he?
No, I think it looks like he's only been involved in producing credits, and he might have contributed, like, it looks like a story for 94. Right. So he didn't, because he didn't direct any of these. So I'm not sure. I'm trying to look which one he wrote, but yeah, I can't see it. But I'd kind of forgot, because, like, you know, we know David Bruckner had 4 his big features, you know, specifically The Ritual and The Night House. And I'd kind of forgot. They're like, oh, yeah, this is the entire reason. And obviously, he did a segment on Southbound as well. So we've seen a lot of stuff from him. And obviously, that recent Hellraiser film. But yeah, it all started with that original segment. And again, talking about that original movie, and it's so hard not to, but, like, the impact it had when you look at all these directors that, like, obviously he went on to do big films. Obviously, you got, like, the Radio Silence crew, who have just now made 2 very successful Scream movies, were kind of in that original film. Obviously, Adam Wingard having a huge success, making, like, multiple Godzilla films at this point. It's crazy. Like, they made stars, and that's rare. Like, there's no other anthology I think you could look at and go, this was a group of kids that were completely unknown, and they've all gone on to make, like,
crazy
huge
horror
films.
Kids, because Ty West wasn't on the original VHS, was he? He did ABCs.
He did ABCs, yeah. Mm. And I can't remember. Did he do one on the second one? I can't remember.
I can't remember either. But I thought he wasn't part of that original crew. But it is, you know, it's funny when credits rolled for this movie and you see Radio Silence, like.
He was on the first one. I forgot.
Shit, was he?
Yeah, he did Second Honeymoon. I forgot, which is a great segment.
Did he do that one? Nice.
Yeah. I forgot, because I thought it was Joe Swanberg, who stars in that one, but he directed the webcam one that Simon Barrett wrote.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of crazy. Man.
I had a funny feeling he did, because because I think that, you know, he was the only established name. You know, he was the only one that had any sort of cachet when that movie came out.
Yeah. God, it's looking back on that now. Like, the list of directors for VHS 1 is just insane.
Yeah, like, those, what they've contributed to horror in the 20 years, whatever, post-VHS.
Yeah, you know, 11 years ago now. It's crazy.
I guess 11, yeah. I think as well, like, you look at that list, and it's impossible to recreate that.
That is the definition of magic in a bottle, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I think that is the thing that I think this franchise does, you know, or did anyway. I think it's done well, you know, it started to shift away from that, but, you know, have that kind of shadow where it's like, man, you ain't getting that again. Like, that is special, and from now on we have to, you know, hope that we can get these, you know, get directors that are going to be elevated and get people come back to do these fun segments, but it's just not going to be that level like what we had there.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, going into this one, I mean, what do you want to do? Do you want to talk about the segments a little bit, give a little synopsis and our thoughts on them? I don't know how much you want to go into them or not.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, really. I kind of just want to talk about it as a cohesive thing and see how it goes first, because I think with something like this, this feels like what arguably one of the more cohesive ones, really, in terms of an overall structure. And so I think it works that way. And also, it's very difficult because, like, there's a lot of stories, and I really don't want to get bogged down in narrative, that's for sure.
No.
I mean, overall, like, surface level thoughts, I really enjoyed it. I think it's much like a lot of anthologies, it has high points and it has low points. But I think the sum of its parts, I ended up really enjoying it. I think that the overall tone and the theme is the strongest that it's ever been. It really felt like it was in the 80s, and I think it's kind of tied together with a lot of smaller little inserts that we've kind of seen before on these 2 recent ones, which is like another new addition that I think just adds to the formula. And in a lot of ways, this really is like the culmination of what I always wanted VHS to be, in that it's I don't always want these like really clean cut segments with like a start, middle and end each time, which is obviously what you get because that is what a short film is. And these are mostly a collection of short films. But I do quite like sometimes that like chaotic energy of, you know, oh, you're jumping into this one. Yeah, like you're kind of jumping in and you feel like you've already missed the start of it. And that's a cool feeling. Or, you know, it cuts off before you get the conclusion. And they kind of do that in a really interesting way in this one as well. Which in the end worked out well, but at the time I was so confused, which we can kind of get into, but I was very much like, oh, this was awesome. Like, obviously talking about that as a segment, like it was an awesome segment that I loved, but it felt like it ended so soon. And I was convinced that we weren't going to pick that up as well. I ended up kind of gaslighting myself because I looked up the list halfway through. Like, I watched this film in two segments. I paused it after, which one was it? The God of Death. So I stopped watching at this point. Or I think it might have been the one after. No, it's the technology one after that.
Is that the subtitle one, The God of Death?
Yeah, that's that one. But it was the technology one after that, where I stopped, because that was probably my least favorite. And then I was kind of like, when I picked it back up, and I'd had a glance to see the titles, and obviously I could see the names of the segments. And so I was like, man, I can't believe we're not getting the conclusion because it has a different name. And it like, it trolled me so effectively because after my first watch, I'd kind of got a really fun segment that ended too early and then two weaker segments. So I was very kind of middling on it and I was a bit disappointed. But then the second half that I watched was just all fire. Like it was all brilliant. So I think that works well, that it kind of is backloaded, has a really good final segment. I think the epilogue's interesting. Like, it was super cool and creepy throughout, and I loved how short the little kind of segments are, and it was really starting to build up this cool thing where I was always like, oh, this isn't, I'm glad it's not overstaying its welcome. It's kind of got this quasi like documentary feel to it mixed with fan footage, which was really cool. I just wish the ending was a bit stronger. Like, it's the final overall segment is class, but then to kind of get the conclusion to the epilogue and for me it just be like, yeah, it was fine, but I really wanted that final punch because that would have been the one thing that I think,
wasn't it?
Yeah, like that was probably the one thing this was missing, was just the epilogue landing. Because other than that, it was like, I really enjoyed the epilogue. And like I say, there are different segments, some I really liked and some I didn't like as much, which is what you, I think, always get with these films. Certainly since the first VHS, I would say that's true. But yeah, just a man, if the final one would have landed with a punch, I probably would have said with absolute certainty that this is the best of these last three. But because it didn't do that, it's very difficult now. And it's like, man, I can't determine the difference between all of them. All I know is that I really liked this one and I thought the theme was strong. And like, my takeaway was that it's arguably the most cohesive because of that. Like I say, the other ones, 92 and 99, and maybe that's because, you know, you put it in the mid 80s, that is such a stronger year to kind of piggyback off. Obviously with the fashion, with the looks and everything, whereas 90s it did blur in a bit. I think 99 was cool because it had a lot of like stuff with the millennium, but 92 was certainly more difficult to remember from that stance. But no, overall had a great time. I thought it was like another very good VHS movie, and I'm always happy about that because I just love this format. But yeah, what did you make of it overall?
Yeah, I think I'm similar to how I am with the other two of this trilogy, really, where I think it's a real strong trilogy. And I think it's, you know, clearly cemented itself as a viable franchise and almost like, you know, because it does feel weird that Shudder has these two anthology series, you know, with this and Creepshow, where it's like, oh, okay, you know, what makes a Creepshow episode and what makes a VHS segment? And I think an outsider would say, well, yeah, they're just both horror segments. You could just shove what, they're interchangeable, and they're absolutely not.
Yeah, they're,
you know,
not at all.
There is distinctly, you know, I'm watching, you know, the Creepshow right now, and there's, you know, distinctly these feel like Creepshow episodes and distinctly these feel like VHS segments. And I think that's the strength that it's got, that both have their own identity and both can exist on this platform. And give you entertainment in different ways. I do think that I would have liked there to, like, with VHS as a whole, like, to have this like identity as a kind of, you know, being able to look at like the wraparounds and look at something and go, oh, okay, this is VHS. Mm. You know, with Creepshow, what you get, obviously, you know, it's very cheesy, but you kind of know, like, oh, okay, these are the wraparounds and this is what the world is. And with VHS, I would have, you know, I would have liked that. And I think this one is the closest we've seen in a while, as what you said, where we do get this like cohesive, it feels like a mix that's all come together with this rap that kind of goes throughout the entire movie. And I think as well, I think we've spoken a lot about the wraparounds over the years and say how they're always pretty shit.
Yeah, definitely.
And we've always kind of said, well, they're just the wraparound. And
even the first film didn't have a great one.
And like, therefore, they just serve the purpose. So, you know, I would say arguably this was the best wraparound we've had.
I think it is because I liked all of it up until the end. Yeah. Like, I like really liked it.
Yeah. And I was similar where I thought the opening segment was very strong. I really, really enjoyed it. I was convinced that we were going to revisit it. So like I was, you know, I didn't look at the segments or anything like that. I just assumed that we'd come back to it with the way it was left, and it felt like a two-parter, and I'm glad it did. And I think the first part delivered, and then the second part delivered absolutely not what I was expecting and was thoroughly satisfying. You know, especially the final reveal at the end with the pistol kind of element. Yeah, I was like, because part of me was thinking like, why, you know, why have they done this? Why have they chose that as their kind of angle? And then when they kind of gave that reveal, I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. This is brilliant. So, you know, I really enjoyed those.
I watched it over two nights as well. I'd completely kind of forgotten that element. So it was brilliant because it got me in the reveal. I wasn't like ahead of the film at that point.
Yeah. I had two hilarious experiences with this film though, where I think it just shows the mindset that VHS puts you in, because I do with these segments, I'm always like, I think with Creepshow, it always wears its heart on its sleeve. And like, often you're like, there's going to be a giant rat monster in this movie, in this segment, isn't there? And then flash to the end of the episode and there's a giant rat monster, you know? And it's like, I kind of love Creepshow for its predictability and the fact that everything that it's predictable, but it's also batshit crazy. Whereas with VHS, I'm like watching the segments, I'm like, okay, where's the horror going to come in? You know, are we going to have vampires? Are we going to have, you know, zombies? Is there going to be, you know, a shapeshifter? Like what's going on? And that's always like the enjoyment that I get. And also like, what's the angle with the fan footage, which, you know, I think this like entry is all round weak on that, apart from the wraparound, because I think a lot of the other stuff is kind of, well, not all of it, but some of the segments I felt like didn't need to be fan footage at all.
The last one, which is an exceptional segment, absolutely takes the piss. Like
that one triggered me,
where I'm just like, who's filming this? Because it's like a multi-cut fight, and I'm like, this looks awesome, but you've just forgotten what this is.
I was not fine with it. I wanted to call it out because I think I get it. We're watching this dumb entertainment and everything else, but like, you've set the fucking rules. Like, don't start pissing around with them now. And that one did trigger me.
Just like dreams, isn't
it? Yeah, right. And because then I thought, you know, that and kind of God of Death also was a bit like, you know, what's going on? Why the hell is this? We got this camera still filming, but you kind of accept it. And that one was part one of my hilarious experience, because for some reason when I watched it, I watched it in multiple parts as well, and I stopped a chunk of the way through God of Death because I was really tired, and I didn't have subtitles. Subtitles did not load, and I thought to myself, that's the gimmick. And I was watching it, and I was thinking, I need to be confused, because I was literally sat there thinking to myself, imagine if you watch Cloverfield and you didn't speak English as well. Like, how...
I honestly think, in my head now, that makes it so much better. Because you don't, because there isn't any interest in plot at all in that entire segment. So you're not missing anything.
No, exactly. Because then when it ended, I thought, I literally thought to my, well, because literally I was falling asleep. So I turned it off and I only had about a minute left. So things were then about to go batshit. But when I turned it back and they were like screaming, I had subtitles. I was like, oh, should I go back and watch this now with subtitles? And I was like, nah, I'm all right. I don't think I missed anything really. But it was, yeah, so I had this incredible different perspective of that segment where I was just watching it, thinking to myself, well, where's the horror going to be? You know, I can see that they're going further down instead of out of this building, and the fuck's going on? And you know, they're all communicating with each other, but I don't speak that language and there's no subtitles. And I genuinely thought that was the point of the segment, to disorientate you in that way.
That's such a good idea. Like, and I actually, like I say, I'm jealous that you got that, because I think that is a better way. Because I, one of my big issues with this was, because, and especially speaking Spanish, where there's like so much content quickly, the subtitles are going at such a pace, and I'm very conscious of when I'm watching something subtitled, to not just stare at the bottom of the screen. Like, I always try and read like some of it, but maybe not all of it, because I want to get a sense of like the performance and what's happening. Yeah. And so this was one that there were times, especially when there was action, and I knew they'd just be saying like, run quickly, get in here, and just, you like pointless dialogue, which is what it was. I was just watching the screen, because I was like, I'm watching the characters. I'm like, I'm not just going to sit here and stare at the subtitles. So yeah, like subtitles in a found footage movie, even something like Record does suffer from that at times.
I think there are times though when it's to its benefit as well. There are certain points in Record that you're more tense because you're reading and you can't look away, etc. But yeah, and the thing about it was, I started to think to myself, like, with VHS, it feels wrong to have subtitles.
Yeah.
You know, because it's meant to be this raw footage that you found. And imagine if you found this videotape of all these fucked up things, and one of them's in a foreign language, you ain't getting subtitles.
Mm.
So I just thought that was the gimmick. And, so that was hilarious. And then
before you move on, I just remember the last time I watched VHS 2, the exact same thing happened to me with Safe Haven, which is the best segment of VHS 2. And that is the entire thing is subtitled, because I think it's in Indonesia. And that one didn't work at all, because that is very story heavy and you're trying to learn about the cult and everything. It's such a good segment. But yeah, I remember that. That's so weird. Like, they must have an issue with that, because I've never remembered. This was years ago. Like, it was prior to, when this came back, I rewatched the original trilogy, and that's what happened.
It feels like it was something to do with the fact that obviously you don't have subtitles for the rest. It's just that one segment. Yeah. So something in the, you know, algorithm has to like kick in subtitles, and then because when I started it from halfway through that segment, the subtitles work.
Yeah.
But they did disappear at the end of it. But and then the other one was brilliant, which was Dreamkill. During Dreamkill, when the kid is in the interrogation room and you're seeing like the footage of the cameras, he barely moves for like a long period of time, you know, maybe 30 seconds or so. And my fucking internet crashed and was buffering. And I kid you not, I sat here for about 2 minutes. And I thought to myself, man, they've jumped the shark here. Like, this is too much. Like, I can't believe it. And I was like, and then I started to like press pause and play, and like my seconds weren't moving. And then I realized in the top corner of the screen that the second clock of the camera also wasn't moving, and I was buffering.
Yeah, that's on you. That one, I think.
That one's on me. But it is. But I think it's genuinely what these segments do to you, where you think like you think that things that have gone wrong are intentional because of the world that VHS is creating. I thought it was just this, like, you know, similar to like Paranormal Activity. I mean, how long is it in parts of Paranormal Activity where you're watching someone not move with a second clock moving?
Yeah,
you know, and I think it just shows that mindset when it is this grindhousey thing, that these things that go wrong, you think it's part of the movie. So yeah, I just had a fun, weird, quirky experience with this whole watch of this movie, which was, you know, added to the entertainment for me. It didn't take away. I managed to get my internet back on and watch the rest of that segment, which was fun. I think that segment in particular, though, got weaker as it went on.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't really care for the final act. I was just
That was the one that went gnarly with the fan footage.
Yeah, that's what I said, Drinko. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I thought you were talking about the rap around title copy, but yeah, because Dreamkiller was awful. That last minute where it was just multi-cam for no reason, just it really did trigger me. And I was really enjoying the whole kind of these videotapes, you know, the videotapes within a videotape, and the fact that they were being found and watched seemingly way before the murders took place, and you know, it really had my interest. And the videos themselves were cool, you know, they were these kind of the opening shot of Halloween style murders, and then kind of, you know, then with this mystery as what was going on, and yeah, I was really into it. And the second they started to try to explain it, it just dropped off a cliff and I lost all interest in it, and then the last minute was just nonsense. And so, you know, that one was the biggest shame coming out of it, because I think there were, you know, two segments that didn't really hit for me, you know, the subtitled one that I didn't get a lot from because I couldn't understand much of it,
and the other one that we just haven't mentioned.
Yeah, and then the other one, what was it, Thank God or whatever it is,
I don't know, I would assume that's Techno God or based Techno upon God. The
yeah, Techno God, yeah, sure, whatever it is, TKNOGD.
Yeah,
and yeah, because it's God of Technology that they talk about, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that one,
it's rubbish.
well, not only is it rubbish, I think it felt the least authentic being in a movie called 1985. I get that was the point, that it was a performance piece that was like jumping into more future tech, but the fact that they were calling them iPhones,
yeah, it felt way too like winky winky, like, yeah, oh, you know about modern tech and this is where we get to, sort of thing, with correct, the gloves and the VR and everything. Yeah, I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, and so I found that whole gimmick to be really winky winky, but then also the actual horror and segment itself, yeah, was just uninteresting anyway. Even if this was in a, you know, a movie that's not branded 1985 VHS, this was just a poor segment, let alone within 1985. That one stuck out like a sore thumb to me.
Yeah, I thought that was considerably the worst, because there just wasn't anything I liked about it. God of Death was interesting, because when it was just a kind of camera crew following, like, firefighters trying to, you know, rescue these people, I was really into it, and it was giving me Record vibes, and kind of, you know, because that's also following firefighter team at the start, and it was really interesting. But then it just did what we've seen, and that is kind of an issue of there being six of these films now, is like the final 10 minutes is just, oh, we're doing this again. Yeah, like, we're doing another... Yeah, we're just doing like, oh, there's the one character who was in on it a lot all along, and now, you know, here's the mental reveal and conclusion. And it was cool at the end how they kind of did tie into this, because this is based upon a real life earthquake that happened in Mexico in the 80s. Yeah, because if you look on Wikipedia, it's like it ties it into the exact one. So that's really cool.
It was cool when the subtitles kicked in the last 90 seconds as well.
Yeah, I bet it sounds it. Yeah, you kind of need it for that last reveal. Otherwise, yeah, this doesn't make any sense. It was
after that reveal. I have no idea.
So yeah, it was kind of, yeah, started off well, but then it just kind of became a very by the number segment. Mm. And then yeah, the kind of the two part, I want to talk about that and Dreamkill, because like,
yeah,
that as a concept is super cool, and it's something that we just haven't seen. Like, again, I'm glad you had the confidence, but I didn't. I was really worried. I think it started so cool. Visually, the horror really worked. I thought it was super tense, and I think it was one of the best uses of kind of POV with the camera, being on the boat and just hearing these shots and not knowing where they were coming from. Thought was super effective. And then when it ended, I was like, oh, this is fantastic. But it's ended, and I was so nervous. And then see it tie into this seemingly unrelated segment, which is also awesome in its own right. The entire setup of this was great. I loved how, like, I was so in straight away because they're hosting this big celebration, but they make it so painfully obvious, or at least in a good way. I mean, not painfully obvious, but like you're aware of the fact that it's not a traditional. They keep saying like that it's not a traditional celebration. It's something just our family do. And so I'm like, oh, this is so cool. I'm like, what the hell is it going to be? And I'd clocked the tattoo earlier as well. And so for that to be like a reveal that meant something was really cool as well. And then you kind of remember like, oh shit, seven people. I remember that. So that was super awesome as well. Like my only negative of both these segments, which were brilliant, was I just wanted a little bit more with the ending again. And it's difficult because I feel like that's a theme now with what we're saying with these, but like it just ended very quickly. And I was like, oh, I really didn't. I thought it was going to be like another scene, if that makes sense, especially with Ruth, like how, you know, she kind of, what happens to her in the bedroom. I thought there was going to be another layer on top of that, and there just wasn't. But this was still awesome.
I kind of thought the reveal of what happened to her was like the nice little bow on it, enough for me.
Yeah, true. Yeah, because that's like, yeah, they did what they said they were going to do at that point. So.
Yeah, in such like a, you know, a clever way.
And oh yeah, they're totally really, getting away with that.
Yeah. But yeah, I was the same that with that first segment, the POV in the boat with these kind of bullets whizzing around, and you really got the feeling that these bullets were whizzing around, you know, flying over your head, and they were just like wrecking everyone around them, and you know, you're in such a low kind of space that you have to hide your body in, because if you poke up for a second, you're gonna get a bullet in you. And I thought the tension of that was great. And then kind of when we got them coming off the boat, and it was this moment of like, what the hell is going on? Like, how is this a thing? And like, what is going on? And kind of when that happened, and kind of we got that kind of reveal and that kind of ending where it was like, okay, it's, you know, this is unconcluded, like we must have more to this. And it was one where I was like, oh, okay, is the sniper like aware of the situation, or is it a happy coincidence? And like, I love the fact that seemingly it was an absolute happy coincidence, and the sniper then moves on to the party and everything else. And I was the same when I was watching it. I was just like, this is already great. Like, it's clearly going to be something sinister. And before the videotape played, I was fully, you know, got the little breadcrumbs that they left out, being like, oh shit, we're going to see the POV of what happened here. And then, yeah, I think just to then get the revenge was a good, you know, satisfying end. It's one of the best kind of, you know, the two parts combined is one of the best things we've seen in VHS in this whole trilogy, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, and then yeah, with Dreamkill, I think it's one that started so high in the way it was, and with seeing this VHS for the first time, then pulling out and seeing the detective side of it in this case and everything, I was like, I want to watch this as a movie, this one. Like, I thought this has like legs to be, you know, a one of these awesome, you know, almost like Seven sort of kind of detective horror movie. You know, what Saw was in its, you know, in Saw One, you know, it was mostly a detective movie, the detectives trying to figure out who Jigsaw was, and like, I was really into it. And then yeah, the second we actually get, you know, where these tapes are coming from, what it's all about, it goes from, you know, being stellar to I have no interest in it, which was a massive disappointment for me with that segment.
Yeah, for me it wasn't that bad at all. I think I agree with you that it starts off super strong and it does end weak, but for me it didn't drop it off anywhere near as much as that. I still really like this. Like, I think it was, those beginning scenes are incredible. I think it has the best violence in the whole film. So that kind of drew me in immediately as this kind of like snuff video to open it, which was already insane. And then getting that reveal of like, I've seen this murder days ago, yet this only just happened. I was like, God damn, that's awesome. So to get that straight away, I was so in. And I do think the only issue, which is it is unfortunately an issue, but it's the fact that this is a short film and they had to cram so much is why it falls apart. Because then suddenly every character in it needs to have a big reveal. So it's so obvious where it's going. Like the moment you kind of introduce to the teenage son and who his connection is to, like it's so clear what's going to happen. But I still was along for the ride. And I completely agree with you. Like this is an insanely strong segment that I'll be stunned if this doesn't get a spinoff. We've seen weaker segments get spinoffs in terms of the concept. Mm-hmm. And like as a concept, this is fucking fantastic. So like if Scott Derrickson wants to do it, this is right there. And I think all of those issues we have can easily be fixed because the concept is so strong that if this is turned into a 90-minute film, you're not going to have any of those problems. You're going to have so many other characters that like a certain reveal is not going to be obvious. And obviously you'd probably change that anyway, but like it would flow so much better. You'd have like more of the fun stuff, which is the investigating, which I feel like they have to kind of blow by to get to the reveal, to get to the action-y finale, whereas actually the best part of this is just the investigation going on, the detectives being like, how the hell are we going to work this out and how is this a thing? Like I love that it's a grounded in reality because it's a detective story, but with that supernatural twist, which I think is super cool. You know, it is that kind of Nightmare on Elm Street vibe of like, you know, it's teens being killed, which could happen, but then there's just like extra layer onto it. And so I love that. This is awesome. And it'd be interesting to see because obviously seems like he's going to be involved in the Black Phone sequel, whether or not he's like fully directing it as his next movie or not. But I would love if they say like, oh yeah, Dream Kill's getting a feature. I'd be so down. I think it'd be awesome.
I'm absolutely there with you because I think, you know, that small change just to give, you know, give it breathing room and just to be able to flesh out what the, you know, where these tapes are coming from a bit more in a more interesting way, I think would be fun. And I also think I would quite like this to be a non-found footage. You know, so that the videotapes adjust the fan footage, but then the rest of it is just a regular movie because, you know, as we said, clearly the last minute or so of this segment, it's not fan footage anyway. It's not remotely fan footage. It's a multi-cam setup that is being shot by nobody. You know, it's literally got POV kind of behind someone's shoulder looking at someone else and then it flicks to that person and it's behind their shoulder looking at the other person. So, you know, it just completely breaks the fan footage kind of angle. And I think, you know, to make this a feature, you just drop that aspect altogether. Don't tether yourself to that. I don't think it's needed. You know, I think that is something that VHS has as its gimmick and it obviously does put people with you know in that kind of in that paint box then where they can't, you know, they can't go outside of that world. They are tethered to fan footage and that's something that, you know, it's funny when I kind of discuss what feels like a creep show and what feels like VHS, that wasn't actually one of the things I described VHS as because it almost to me doesn't feel like the thing that is in the DNA of VHS. I think a segment feels uniquely VHS because of its griminess and its you know, balls to the wall story and the way it's portrayed, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a, in my mind, fan footage for it to work as a VHS segment, but clearly it does need to be fan footage for the rules that they build.
Yeah, this was one of the only times as well for me that a segment did, it felt like it was restrained because of the fan footage. And I completely agree that this didn't need it. And it was one of the ones where there are times like when the detectives just take a camera with them and they're like, let's just film this. And it's like, why would detectives be filming this random like murder case? It makes no sense. So yeah, like that to me isn't obvious. There is like no way. Yeah, there's no way on earth that if this gets extrapolated into something else, it'll be found footage. And I completely agree with you that you just keep those snuff tapes. I think Sinister did that, didn't it? Of like, it was a normal film that he directed.
Yeah, but
yeah, he watches the tapes that are these found footage tapes. So yeah, it's that to me is a no brainer. But I really like this. Like, overall, the more I think about it, it's super strong because I really like Dream Kill. I love the two parter. And then I think that the. I can't remember if I just said, but the wraparound for the most part is really good as well. So that's like, you know, 3 out of 5 with a big tick next to them. So yeah, it's a really strong one. Like, it's difficult again to compare it to them, and I'd have to really go back. I've only seen those two recent ones once, you know, both times for the show. I haven't gone back to watch them yet. But this is a really strong one. And I think it just shows the quality of the franchise, really, is like, again, we're now 6 entries deep. In my opinion, Viral's the only bad one. Like, the rest are all either good to great or amazing, which is, again, a very, very strong franchise. And I'm just so happy, man. VHS is one of those things that we loved it for that time period, you know, just before starting the podcast, in those few years preceding it, when we were trying desperately to find new horror, because it just wasn't as accessible as it was now. Like, it's crazy that's how long we've been doing the show, that it really has changed the landscape of horror in those years. Because it was hard to find new shit, and the VHS was like it was a win for us. It was like, yes, we found something that speaks to us. And I was so gutted that after just one poor entry, it just died. And so, man, I'm so happy this has got new legs and a second life on Shudder. And obviously now it's going to eclipse because it's going to be more new entries. Obviously, we're going to get a fourth one. So yeah, long live VHS. But yeah, I guess what would be your recommendation for this one?
Yeah, I would. We're doing them again, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, people were doing it last week. It was too fun just to talk shit for a change.
Yeah, no, I would recommend this movie. I think it's you know, if you're a fan of the franchise already, then it's an absolute no brainer. You watch it. If you've never seen a VHS, don't feel afraid, because this is the 6th one. They are. Completely separate to one another, and there's no threads, there's not a thing that you need to know about the other ones. You should certainly go back and watch them, because they're mostly great. But yeah, you can just dump into this one and see if you like it, for sure. And yeah, I think now this trilogy as a whole is just a really strong trilogy in this VHS world now, where I think all 3 of these Shudder entries have been strong. You know, as we've discussed at length, the high, you know, highs and lows, but the highs are there, and it's mostly good stuff as opposed to bad stuff in these movies. And I don't know, like, I think when I'm watching a fan footage movie, if it starts strong like this one does, I find myself a lot more forgiving of the bad segments, because I'm still having like a good time, because they're, as long as they're not, you know, 40 minutes long, if they're fairly short, it's like, okay, I'm in, I'm trying to figure out what's going on in the world, and I'm out. And even if I don't fully enjoy it, I still have that fun experience of figuring it out, let alone if I don't speak the language. So, you know, for me, mostly fun, even when the segments aren't great. And yeah, so I would recommend it for sure.
I also think this couldn't have been paced any better. Because if you look at the order, and it's like you get part one of the two-parter to kick things off, which I think is the best segment. You then get, you know, God of Death, which is mad. You then get by far the worst segment, bang in the middle. And then the pick-me-up is the part two of the best segment. And then ending things with Dream Kill. So, yeah, I think it's paced flawlessly. But no, I would completely and unequivocally recommend this to everyone listening. It's brilliant. And it's one of my favorite horror movies of the year. And I think it's been a weird year, because franchise films is what's kept us going. And that's something that is typically not the case at all. You know, we strive for new horror, absolutely. And I think our top 10s have shown that over the last 7 years. And is a huge reflection of that. But like this year, I look and I'm like, man, I'm so happy that Scream and Saw and VHS delivered to me, because I love those franchises. And yes, I would much rather 3 movies that I had no idea, you know, like I'd rather a Barbarian came along, you know, something that I had no skin in the game, didn't know the director, it was just a brand new thing, it was just like, holy shit, what the hell is this? Like, that is what I'd prefer. But I'm not gonna sit here and complain that I've had excellent franchise entries all year. So yeah, very, very happy. But yeah, this is a very awesome movie, so I'd highly recommend it. But yeah, that was our discussion of VHS 85. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, got a couple of movies actually to talk about this week. I'll try and be brief on. But yeah, I did end up watching one of the recent Arrow pickups with the 4K crazy sale going on. I was like, I've got to watch at least one of these because I have such a habit of just buying shit and just putting it on the shelf.
I've got them all sat there.
So I'm like, oh, I just need to pick one. So
it's in 4K.
Oh yeah, don't even get me started on that. It's like, I just don't even know when I'm going to get around to that.
I just like to have it.
Yeah, that was never I didn't buy that with the intention to rewatch it straight away. That was like, I'll get to it eventually. But no, with these ones, it's like, man, I need to watch these. So I ended up picking one at kind of at random, but it's one I've wanted to rewatch for a while. Movie that I love, and I just don't even know how much we've really talked about on the show. But that is Battle Royale. Which I've always loved Battle Royale. To me, it goes back to kind of, again, when we were just trying to find new and interesting horror. And I'm struggling to remember when I first saw this movie.
It was ages ago. It
was, but it's weird because when you look at it online, it's like, it obviously came out in 2000, but it was so niche for the first decade. You know, like, it was basically got like a handful of screenings worldwide in that first 10 years. And it wasn't until like it kind of got decent DVD and then Blu-ray distribution like a decade later. So I feel like we probably got it kind of as soon as that proper wave hit.
We watched on DVD for the first time.
Yeah, so I think it was, I think when the DVD came out a decade later, I think we got it pretty much straight away.
Yeah.
So it's crazy to think that. And obviously, I think the movie just holds up so well. I think it's outstanding, actually. It's like incredible. You know, the legacy that the movie now has and kind of what Battle Royale means in gaming is insane as well. That it has like created the most popular genre of video games accidentally. Let alone, you know, these whole plethora of copycats like Hunger Games and stuff. And it really boils down to such a simple and interesting concept, but it's done so flawlessly. And
well, there's just so many story arcs in this that you get invested in every time you watch it, even though you know like every time I watch that movie, there's certain characters I want to survive. I know they're not going to, but I still get invested every time.
The way they do that, because it is almost like segmented. Once you're getting to like on the island, the kids are there, go. It really is that of like a scene will begin and you'll get that entire character's arc play out and resulting into how they die. And so each one of those, there is like probably six or seven that are like all stand alone and stand out as like, oh, this should be the best scene of the film, but there's seven of these. And so I think it's a magical movie, and it really made me think watching it of like, obviously we've seen so many great foreign language horror movies over the years, and I was thinking like, what, you know, is there like a go-to, like is there a this is the best foreign language horror film, or is it a case of there's probably three or four? Because I couldn't default to just one. I think Battle Royale is absolutely in the conversation, and on a personal level, Martyrs would be as well. But I think Old Boy is absolutely in that conversation as well. I think Old Boy and Battle Royale. Record's up there for sure.
I think that's the thing. I mean, I just don't think it. I think it's a bit of a mute point because I don't think you'd ask that about American horror movie, and I just think, you know, it's there are just some world class subtitled horrors out there.
Kind of the Dead is valid, and I personally love Audition. Again, it's like, is that in the conversation? Like, perhaps, but certainly Battle Royale is like, I think that and Old Boy would be the two that would probably have the most fans, and I wouldn't disagree with either of those being the selection. But
yeah, you're talking about things like Ring and stuff as well. You know,
the original Ring,
because I think the Ring and Battle Royale were, for me, the first like two of like those movies where I'm watching a subtitled movie, and I'm not just watching a subtitled movie, but it's seeing a different art to filmmaking and a different style, and realizing that it, you know, in my head, I'd often watch these movies and be like, well, wish it was in English, like, but watching, you know, these, it's like, no, these don't work, you know, record. It's like, I don't want to see that remade because that style and everything else is distinctly to that country. Mm. And I think, you know, Battle Royale and The Ring, you know, I think it's interesting because I think the Americanization of The Ring, I enjoyed that movie immensely, but the original is so tonally different, you know, and I think that's the thing that these movies kind of taught me that, like, oh, okay, no, I'm not just having to watch these subtitle movies because they're only available this way. That there is a very good reason because of the way that they're made and the way they look and the way they feel, because they are authentically from that country.
What's really interesting as well is, like, all those movies we just listed, it feels like Battle Royale is the only one that hasn't been remade.
Crazy.
Because, yeah, all of those other ones are, like, even Old Boy, like, years later. So it is weird. And obviously, it's like you get something like Hunger Games and that, but it is bizarre to me that, like, that as an IP, especially with the fact that those two words alone mean something now.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, but I'm glad. And I think that as well, like, thinking back to that era, it was so exciting of like, when I first heard about J-horror. And I was just like, oh, what is this? And it kind of felt like there was this huge boom coming with, like, say, The Ring and Battle Royale. And I don't think we've ever seen anything like that before or since in terms of, like, an influx from a very specific country that didn't have a voice in the genre before. Because it's like, yeah, we've had Martyrs, and that was kind of part of that French extreme movement, which is the only other one that's slightly like that, because we had, like, Inside and a few others straight after Martyrs. And then, like I say, in recent years, it's like we've seen Record and obviously, you know, so many different ones that we've even done for the podcast. But I don't think there's ever been of, like, that era of, like, it just seemed like there was something in the water. And I would love to see that in any case now, if it was England or anywhere abroad. It would be so exciting to be like, here's this one place that's just making horror. And the theme is that it's just from that country and it's great. Because that's the only thing that ties Battle Royale and Old Boy and The Ring and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. Yeah. Like, that they're all so different films. They just happen to be from the same place. So, yeah, I absolutely loved it. I was so happy. I'm definitely going to try and track down, because you don't get it as part of the 4K, the second one. Whereas I think, yeah, I did when I had the Blu-ray, but I've got rid of it ages ago. So I've kind of shit out of luck now where I don't have the second one anymore. Because I think so, right? Have you got Battle Royale on Arrow Blu-ray?
Literally then moving to have a look.
The 4K is spectacular, and it's a brand new restoration. Oh, wow. But yeah, you don't get any of the films on it. It's a Requiem, I think the second one's called. But I had the Blu-ray back in the day, because that was one of the... I think it was the second Arrow Blu-ray I ever bought after Dawn of the Dead.
All right. No.
Does it not?
No, I thought it did.
Yeah, I thought it did as well. Some I don't know how we both got that collective memory. Like, something's happened.
Do you reckon they must have put something out or something that had it, like a weird, another edition?
Well, there's a Battle Royale 4K limited edition. It's like five discs. And on that, I think you get two and three. But obviously that's a new thing that came out in the last couple of years. Whereas obviously that original Arrow Blu-ray is like over 10 years old now at this point. But either way, I will get my hands on it, because I'm so curious. It's like, I know at the time people didn't really like it, and I know the director, he like died early in production. So he'd only shot like a week's worth of footage, and then it was someone like an editor and a producer like finished the project. But even that is like enough for me to be interested in watching it. And like, I've not watched Battle Royale 2 for so long. I remember liking it at the time, though. It had like a different vibe to it with like returning characters and stuff. So yeah, I'm definitely going to go revisit that, but it probably won't be this year because there's just so much stuff to watch at the minute. I want to touch upon as well, like just very briefly, another movie which we both got to see over the weekend, in fact, at the cinema, little movie called The Creator. That I was very much excited for. Obviously, a science fiction movie, not a horror movie, but we do love our sci-fi as well. I just wanted to give a huge recommendation to this movie because I absolutely loved it. I think it delivered exactly what I wanted, and we talk a lot about how it's so hard to get original science fiction out there. You know, I was like, it was interesting because I classed like Dune in that, even though it's obviously based upon a book and there was the original movie, it's like, you know, even like you get the Blade Runner sequence stuff. Like, it's so hard to think about when was the last time there was like big budget sci-fi that was a brand new concept that isn't based upon anything before. So I'm thankful that it got made. And obviously this was, is it Gareth Edwards? I always get his name wrong. Yeah, is it Gareth Edwards? obviously director of Rogue One, an amazing film, truly, truly amazing. And so it's like, man, I've waited 7 years for this guy to make something else. And to me, the wait was worth it, because I thought this movie was phenomenal. Like, as a big sci-fi fan, it delivered on the visuals and it delivered on the emotion. You know, it's a pretty standard story. There's nothing mind-blowing here. And I think ultimately that might be where it will be let down for some people, because it's about AI as well, you know, which is super interesting right now. It's this very big hot topic. But this isn't the movie which deals with that in a super interesting way. It's like, yeah, remember how we talked about AI in movies a long time ago? It's still there in this. There isn't any brand new take on it that I think is super interesting. And I think that element could be expanded in the future, where, like, I still think we haven't seen, like, the best kind of modern take on AI. We're almost living in that world, so it's very hard to pull that off in a film, I actually think, the more I think about it. And I'm glad that that's not what this movie's about. Like, this movie's about human emotion, which is always my favorite thing in every sci-fi movie. Like, it's why Interstellar is one of my favorite sci-fi movies, because the human emotion in that is just incredible. And I think this is up there. So, yeah, I love this film. So I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to it, because It's a very awesome film.
I think similar, that it definitely was very good, incredibly well made, and you know, for me, the fact that there was a lot of just treading the same ground, and it felt like, you know, it was just telling a story that we've seen before, you know, in terms of father-child relationships and the AI and a lot of other things. And it was like, oh, okay, if this had been the first time I've seen this, it would have blown my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Because everything else about this movie is stellar. But then the fact that this is just such a rewashed world with everything else. And yeah, the fact that I feel like the world we're in right now has progressed almost to this level. You know, it's like, I kind of wanted, to give me something new in this sci-fi world. And what I don't mean the world we're living in, I mean the movie world. You know, we've seen so many of these things before, you know, with robots and AI and the conversation around them, that yeah, I just, it left me wanting something a bit more new, instead of just what you did, which was just enjoy the visuals and enjoy this story as what it is. If this had been the first time, it would have blown me away for sure.
I think the reason as well for me why it so clicked is it made me feel, and that was like my biggest takeaway of why I ended up loving it, because I think everything else in it's great, but it's like that's like an almost unquantifiable element that it's like, it's to put that in a review, it'd be difficult, because it's like, well, why did it make you feel? It's like, well, I don't know, but like The Last of Us does as well. And but there isn't many things that do. There isn't many things that I'm so invested in the characters that when you get those beats in the finale, even though you could probably see them coming a mile away, they still work. And they completely did for me. And I ended up just having a smile on my face, because I was like, man, that was so satisfying. And again, shout out to Gareth, because there's probably a reason why it took him 7 fucking years to make this film. Because, you know, he's coming off the back of making an absolutely amazing Star Wars movie, and I'm sure he had plenty of worlds that he could play in. I'm sure he got the keys to Dune and fucking Alien and all these different things, but it was like, no, I want to create something new. And I love that, you know. So and there was plenty of stuff in it, like I say, I don't want to sound too negative in terms of the AI stuff, because I think like what Nomad is, for example, which I won't go into, but like Nomad as a concept and as a visual was so phenomenal, and the way it transpired in the finale, like there's a certain moment when they're like, we're gonna do this now, and I almost wanted to like applaud it, because I was like, oh my god, they're doing the thing, and they ended up doing it, and god, it was so satisfying. So yeah, I this to me is like a top 5 movie of the year for sure. Do you want to talk a bit about our little ginger friend as well, while we're here?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched all of episode 2 so far, but
Oh, we don't have to. Yeah, I was just going to quickly touch upon it because obviously we don't always have to talk about it. But my opinion has swayed slightly in a good way, which is why I did want to touch upon it, because I ended up really liking this week's episode. I'm torn because I'm like, I don't know if this was that much better or if I just had a completely different mindset based upon our chat about it last week. And I think it's like a combination of the two, because I definitely went into last week's episode expecting more of a continuation and looking at it more as like this is the next chapter of the Chucky saga. Whereas I think if you go into it as more of like this is a fresh start with a new Chucky setup and a new Chucky, and then you will get that other stuff sprinkled in with the teens, that's such a better way of looking at it. Because what you said is so true about how like the early parts of Chucky, when people don't know who Chucky is always the best part. And we get so much of that in this episode, which I thought was great. And I think the teens are awesome. Again, that's something that I didn't want to understate, because I think I probably did last week. Is like, we had a major issue with the way the teens were used last season.
Yeah, they're fantastic this
season. They're back to season one. They're fucking great. Like, I love them in the whole episode. I think they're growing in front of our eyes, and they're kind of acknowledging that as well, that kind of Stranger Things vibe, which I love.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, we've been with these people for 3 seasons now. Like, we have seen them change in a adapt. And so I think they're nailing that. I think the Chucky stuff's really fun. I think the White House stuff was better in this episode as well. Like, I was kind of, again, being a bit miserable last week and saying that I was sick of it, but I definitely wasn't in this episode. I think adding like a new character as like a detective and stuff, it's cool. Like, I really like this episode. Like I say, it doesn't have all the legacy stuff yet, which I'm sure we might not even get, but I ended up really liking this week's episode overall, which was good.
Yeah. It's really hard to, because we know that our time with season 3, part 1 is so small.
Yeah.
I get that, like, we want to see Jennifer Tilly. We want to see what's going on with that side of it. And the reality is we probably won't.
Yeah.
Or, like, worse is that it will probably be like a
teaser.
A tiny little bit. Yeah, like a teaser almost, because it was implied to be a mid-season break instead of a maybe forever break. but I just want to enjoy seeing him on our small screens, definitely. And just, for me, from what I've seen of episode 2 so far, it is just more the same, and just enjoying seeing Chucky in that world, and certainly the dynamic of the White House, and kind of, it is just funny how ridiculous it is that, like, he can just steal, like, this letter opener, and they're just like, oh, yeah, that's, whatever. Where's my, like, Washington letter opener that could be a weapon that could kill me as President of the United States? And the team's just like, I don't know, you'll find it. Brilliant. Like, could you imagine if something like that actually went missing in the White House?
Yeah.
The whole place would be in lockdown forever, probably.
Yeah, let alone the fact that, like, obviously in episode... Yeah, I was going to say, in episode 1, like, someone got shot in the head. And they're just like, it's just a bit weird. Just carry on as normal, like it is.
The kid is staying back in that room within, like, 24 hours.
Yeah. But yeah, it was.
But I don't mind. I just because it's all part of the campiness.
Yeah,
and just part of
the cheese. Yeah,
yeah. You know, it's never trying to take itself seriously, and hasn't done for however many years now at this point.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I'm glad I'm enjoying it, and I think I think what the teens got up to and kind of slowly etching their way towards Chucky again. That was something you touched upon last week about how, like, okay, now they know where he is, but how do they get to that? And I really liked their plan and the way it kind of unraveled. But like, and again, the way this week's ended was like a case of, I don't know where this is going now, where I'm like, how are they going to figure this out? So I am like actually intrigued now, where it doesn't seem by the numbers, it's like, I don't know how they are going to get to Chucky. He really has got like the perfect protection zone right now, which is super cool. But yeah, having
it
a great
was,
time.
Because I think season 2, the school stuff was so uninteresting to
Definitely.
Me that, like, I was begging for Tiff or Fiona to turn up and just kind of give me that lineage. Whereas with this, I am just really happy with this story, which is way more akin to season 1.
Yeah.
Back when we first watched season 1, and we were asking these questions, like, is it going to be a continuation? Is it not? What is it going to be? And when we watched those first two episodes or what first few episodes, and it was like, oh, okay, this is just telling like a really cool Chucky story. And we were really on board. And then, you know, when the legacy turned up, it just elevated it.
Mm, definitely. So yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah, it's a shame that, yeah, it's going to be over soon, but
I know.
I'm glad I'm enjoying it.
Do we only get four?
I think so. It's weird because that just doesn't feel right at all.
That hurts so much.
Yeah. It can't, like, it's like, surely it can't already be half over, but like, I think that's what it is. And like I say, who knows? Hopefully they'll just drop it quicker than we expect, but I just, who knows? Like I say, I'm trying to ignore that and just get, you know, enjoying what we had, and I'm really glad I enjoyed episode two considerably more than the first one, and I hope that continues for the next two. But yeah, that is pretty much it for this week. Next week is very exciting though. Hopefully we're going to be chatting about a certain return of a Mr. Flanagan. He's featured pretty highly, I'd say, over the years, you know, a few banger movies, some of the best seasons of TV we've ever seen.
Yeah, certainly the most prolific director in our tenure with the podcast.
Yeah, if you're including everything that he's put out in the genre, I just don't think, like I say, he's the most consistent, which is already like a hats off to you if everything was just good. But then you look at the individual quality of everything he's done, and it's remarkable. Yeah, if it's anything like those, next week is going to be a very interesting one for sure. But yeah, that is it for this week. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Mainly because I never could. How could I start that?